Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, exports of Saskatchewan lentils and peas to India, the province's largest pulse market, experienced significant growth by the end of 2023. We'll hear all the details on that were just released this morning. Meanwhile, the chief agricultural editor of SaskAgToday.com heard details of yesterday's crop insurance announcement from Saskatchewan Agriculture Minister David Merritt. Kevin Hirsch will join us on today's program. Some of the feeder steer and heifer prices in Saskatchewan that had enough data to report on experienced positive gains last week. Fonda Froats, the provincial cattle specialist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture, will join us. And Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture has provided his weekly overview of the wheat market. We'll also have that coming up on today's edition of the program. All that and much more on Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for your agriculture outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio-meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. Exports of Saskatchewan lentils and peas to India, the province's largest pulse market, experienced significant growth by the end of 2023. India, already one of the top global markets for Saskatchewan's agriculture producers, is also one of the fastest growing, with provincial agri-food exports increasing in volume by over 71% in 2023 when compared to 2022. Saskatchewan's total agri-food export volume to India ranked second in year-over-year growth among its markets, behind only Nigeria and ahead of Algeria, Indonesia, Peru, and China. India ranked sixth among Saskatchewan's agri-food export markets in terms of value for 2023 at $712 million. Agriculture Minister David Merritt says our agriculture producers are among the best in the world at supplying safe, nutritious, and sustainably grown products. He says with India being Saskatchewan's fifth largest trading partner, we want to help our companies and producers remain profitable and competitive by reinforcing our global links with key trade partners in support of Saskatchewan's long-term economic goals. Saskatchewan has already surpassed its 2030 growth plan target of $20 billion in agri-food exports, with total shipments of $20.2 billion for 2023. Overall, there was a 26% increase in Saskatchewan's total agri-food export volume in 2023 over the previous year. Saskatchewan's exports have grown by more than 52% since 2013, contributing to Canada's total exports to India in 2023, reaching a value of $5.1 billion. The province also continues to strengthen and diversify its economic links with India beyond commodity trade, exemplified by the recent renewal of a Memorandum of Understanding to enhance academic collaboration with the Shastri Indo-Canadian Institute, a binational educational organization with 194 member institutions, including the University of Regina and the University of Saskatchewan. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
The Manitoba government's pulse specialist says it's likely there will be more dry bean acres seeded in the province this spring. Dennis Lang says projections indicate there will be 180,000 to 200,000 acres devoted to dry beans in Manitoba this spring. In 2023, 142,300 acres were grown, according to Statistics Canada. He estimates the 2023-24 average yield for dry beans in Manitoba to be between 1,800 and 2,000 pounds per acre, down from 2,000 last year and 2,300 in 2022-23. However, he adds that dry conditions would not be the major obstacle preventing the expansion of acres, but rather a lack of seed supply. He also says if there's a dry spring, growers will have to pay attention to seeding depth. Soybean acres are also expected to increase in Manitoba at between 1.8 to 2 million acres compared to 1.595 million in 2023-24. Trade ministers from the World Trade Organization's 164 member countries can agree on at least one basic thing about the WTO's dispute settlement process. They're still committed to fixing the broken system for resolving trade disputes. Beyond that, there were few signs of progress as trade representatives, including Canada's Mary Ng and the United States' Catherine Tai, met in Abu Dhabi last week for the WTO's 13th ministerial conference. The WTO members were able to agree on issuing a ministerial decision that reiterated their commitment to having a fully and well-functioning dispute settlement system available to all members before the end of 2024. They also directed their officials to accelerate the discussions, specifically on some of the unresolved issues, including appeal and review, and accessibility. The dispute settlement process has been dysfunctional since around 2018, with the United States refusing to approve new judges for the WTO's appellate body out of protest. Bayer says it won a trial in a lawsuit brought by a retired Postal Service worker in Pennsylvania who alleged he developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma from using the company's Roundup weed killer. In addition to the jury verdict in the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas, Bayer said a California farmer who said he contracted the same type of cancer from exposure to the product and his wife voluntarily dropped their lawsuit while a trial was underway in the state court in Sonoma County, California. A lawyer for the plaintiff in the Pennsylvania case said the jury had not been allowed to hear key evidence, including a finding by a World Health Organization body that glyphosate, Roundup's active ingredient, was likely capable of causing cancer. Tuesday's victories come on the heels of another trial win for the company in Arkansas on Friday. Meanwhile, Bayer's CEO has ruled out the possibility of spinning off the company's crop science division as a separate business. In a news conference yesterday, Bill Anderson said the company has completed a thorough review of its current structure, which includes three divisions: pharmaceuticals, consumer health, and crop science. He said the company will not be moving ahead with a breakup, despite pressure from investors who are frustrated with Bayer's financial performance. Anderson said the company is facing four major challenges: ongoing litigation against glyphosate in the U.S., the loss of exclusivities in pharmaceuticals, high debt levels, and internal bureaucracy. He says a public offering for one of the divisions, such as crop science, would require an all-hands-on-deck effort for up to 2 years, delaying revenues and jeopardizing access to financing. And a court ruling that found a thumbs-up emoji to be legally binding is being appealed in Regina. A farmer was ordered to pay more than $82,000 last year for not delivering product to a grain buyer after responding to a text message with the emoji. The judge said in his decision that the thumbs-up emoji met signature requirements and therefore the farmer breached his contract. The three justices who heard the appeal yesterday have reserved their decision. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg today. And yes, it is free. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. We have light snow and minus 14 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Some of the feeder, steer, and heifer prices in Saskatchewan that had enough data to report on experienced positive gains last week. Provincial cattle specialist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture, Fonda Froats, says the only one steer weight category saw a week-over-week price decrease, while all of the heifer prices were up.
Saskatchewan steers ranged from $475.58 per hundredweight for the 4 to 500-pound category down to $322.43 for the 8 to 900-pound category. Average category prices for steers were between unchanged and up to $14.16 per hundredweight above the prior week, and that was for those 6 to 700-pound steers. Saskatchewan feeder heifers ranged from $405.83 per hundredweight for the 4 to 500-pound category down to $293 for the 800-plus-pound category. The largest increase over the prior week was in the 6 to 700-pound category, which were $11.16 above the week prior.
She says there was good demand for cattle.
There appeared to be good demand from feedlots over the week, which included buyers from Ontario and U.S. Some of the grazing areas have also seen improved moisture conditions, which put demand on grass cattle. I think we're seeing optimism in the industry and also good demand for less cattle available, which is supporting the market.
Another decline in cattle marketed in the province was noted in the cattle market update.
There were 7,777 Saskatchewan feeder cattle marketed over the week of March 1st, and this is just down from 9,153 the previous week.
And Froat says prices for Alberta were up.
On March 1st, D2 cows averaged $148.93 per hundredweight, and that was up $4.83 over the previous week, while D3 cows were also up $128 per hundredweight from the previous week to average $130.25 per hundredweight for the week. And the Canfax price for Alberta fed steers was $233.38, and this was up compared to the last reported price of $219.73 per hundredweight, and that was for the week of February 16th.
That's Fonda Froats, the provincial cattle specialist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture. She had the cattle market update for the week ending March 1st.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April are trading at 187.22 this afternoon, down 77. June live cattle trading at 183.30, down 22. April feeder cattle trading at 256 even, down 117. May feeder cattle trading at 257.77, down 92. April lean hogs trading at 84.60, down 57. May lean hogs trading at 90.40, down 117. And that's the livestock market conditions. Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture has provided his weekly overview of the wheat market. It was issued through the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission.
Wheat futures were lower last week from ongoing competition from the Black Sea. As far as some of the most important news that happened in the wheat markets last week, we've been talking at length about how the Black Sea prices have been pressuring futures here. Well, wheat futures have been following the cash markets as of recently. All the major wheat exporting countries have old crop left to sell, and they're competing for demand as they try to make room for the crop harvest that begins in June. There's a wide discrepancy between some of the official estimates for what the carryout will be in the Black Sea and the EU at the end of the year. Most official estimates have Russia's carryout at around 12 million tons, which is generally seems to be give or take 100,000 tons on either side. But for Ukraine, the USDA is forecasting a 4 million ton carryout, while the International Grains Council is forecasting just a 2.3 million ton number. Given the pace of exports from Ukraine, the 2.3 million number is probably the more reasonable estimate. The biggest discrepancy, however, when it comes to the carryout numbers over in Europe are the EU numbers. There is a 4.8 million ton spread between the USDA, who is using a 15.5 million ton carryout number for the EU, and the European Commission, who is using a 20.6 million ton carryout number. The International Grain Council, meanwhile, is somewhere there in the middle at 17.8 million tons. The market is currently acting like the EU Commission's number is the best guess, just given the way the prices have been declining, down to similar levels that they've been at when carryouts were similarly this high. And with that, let's go back over to Canada, where week 30 exports were strong at another 529 million tons. This creates a season total of 12.3 million tons, which is 8% ahead of last year. We are now 58% through the marketing year, and we've shipped 61% of the total volume that the AAFC is anticipating. We think exports should surpass the 20.25 million tons that the AAFC is expecting, which will help take down our ending stocks even more than current projections. For Durham, we have a special report on the North African countries. Conditions in the Maghreb countries seem to be variable as limited rain and warmer than normal temperatures have persisted in North Africa. Moisture in Morocco is well below average, and the crops there have experienced irreversible damage in most of the cereal growing regions. Crop conditions in Algeria are mixed. Dryness delayed seeding, and while the crop damage in the west looks irreversible, crops in the eastern and central continental regions were able to recover. Seeding in Tunisia was delayed by 20 to 30 days than normal, but the crop seems to have essentially fully recovered. The crops in each country are entering the flowering stage and will need more rain before the end of the season. We estimate that the cumulative impact of the various conditions of the crop in North Africa will cause durum production there to be very similar to the 3.6 million tons that was grown in the previous year's drought. And you can see if you go to the Sask Wheat website and look at the wheat market outlook, that's down significantly from average, albeit in line with last year. As far as Canadian durum exports go, exports in week 30 were small at 18.2 million tons. As we mentioned, we're 58% through the marketing year, and ironically, Canada shipped exactly that, 58% of the AAFC's 3.2 million ton export projection. Now, we've mentioned in the past that we think that that number may be hard to achieve given the current outlook on what the global importers are taking from Canada. As far as the durum recommendations go, we would finish old crop durum sales, but are not ready to make new crop commitments yet. We would, however, watch for opportunities in the new crop if your area buyers should start looking for some early coverage. And we'll head south to the U.S. U.S. weekly futures were lower last week from ongoing competition in the Black Sea. U.S. wheat sales were uninspiring at 327.3 thousand tons, and so this makes a season total of 18.2 million tons, which is 6% ahead of last year. Almost half of the sales were of hard red spring wheat. Total hard red spring wheat commitments are 6.1 million tons compared to the USDA's total export estimate for that wheat class of 6.2 million tons. So according to the USDA, there's only 100,000 tons of hard red spring wheat remaining in the US to export, which is too low. Mexico, the USDA's largest customer of hard red spring wheat, has increased hard red spring wheat purchases by 40% from last year, having bought a to-date total of 1.1 million tons. Moving over to Australia, where exports from Australia remain thin as wheat futures continue to decline and farmers are reluctant sellers. In Argentina, fresh news was limited. Farmer sales advanced another 300,000 tons to 7.9 million tons, and exporters own 5.9 million tons of the total volume that's been sold. In the European Union, Matif wheat futures fell another 4 to 7 euros over the week as the March contract is now at fresh lows. In need of cash and space, farmers in the EU have been selling, allowing the funds to buy in some of their short position amidst declining future prices, which is just perfect for the funds. The funds seem to be reducing its short position as we get closer to the spring and summer weather markets. EU wheat exports continue to improve on last year. Total wheat exports from the EU are now 20.5 million tons, which is just 3% down from last year, which has closed the year-over-year gap by 2% from last week. Brussels lifted EU ending stocks by 200,000 tons as a 500,000 ton increase in imports was slightly offset by a 200,000 ton decrease in production. Exports were left unchanged. Ending stocks are now expected to be 20.3 million tons compared to the USDA's 15.5 million tons. Recent price action implies that Brussels' number is closer than the USDA's, as we mentioned previously. Excessive moisture continues to plague parts of the EU, including the Benelux countries, Western Germany, Denmark, and southeastern Sweden. Overabundant rain has caused localized flooding, waterlogging, and has prevented fertilization of fields. Meanwhile, southern EU countries are dry. Southeastern Romania and northeastern Bulgaria have received less than half of the average rainfall amount. Dry conditions are expanding in Spain, and parts of Italy are recording some of the driest conditions in recent history. So we'll watch these developing situations as well. Okay, in the Black Sea, Russia and Ukraine are estimated to have exported a combined 6.5 million tons of wheat during the month of February. This would be 2 million tons more than the previous year and a monthly February record. As far as some of the significant purchases and trades that happened last year, trade was thin. We heard Thailand bought some April-May shipment feed wheat from the European Union, and Jordan bought some new crop, 60,000 tons of new crop wheat at $240 on a CNF basis. This was 50 cents less than their last old crop purchase last week, but the price indicates that it was likely filled with Black Sea wheat, as it reflects about a $20 per ton discount to French wheat. As far as some of the other significant things that happened last week, the decline in wheat prices has caused farm margins to shrink into negative territory in many locations, including Russia. Officials there have started to point out this fact, but it's unclear what, if anything, the Russian government will do about it. And finally, just in China, Chinese researchers are said to have used gene editing to develop a variety that has both a longer and heavier grain. China is the world's largest wheat-producing nation and is in the process of commercializing gene-edited and GMO grains in its push for food security. As far as the outlook goes, there are many sellers and just a few buyers left for the current crop wheat, so prices could be headed even lower whilst we still have current crop sellers who need to sell. However, we do expect some fund buying, so we would leave cash markets alone for the time being.
That's Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture in Winnipeg. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up in 1 minute's time.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading up in the nearby months this afternoon. May canola trading at $596.90, up $1.60. July canola trading at $604.70, up $1.20. May Minneapolis wheat trading at $642.50, down 13 cents. May Kansas City wheat trading at $553.25, down 16 cents. May Chicago wheat trading at $530.25, down 20¾ cents. May corn trading at $426.50, up $0.25. May soybeans trading at $11.47 per bushel, down 2 cents. May oats trading at $3.57¼, down 4¾ cents. And that's the commodities update.
Farm Bulletin Board.
What is the most pressing agriculture-related issue for farmers ahead of the Saskatchewan election, and why? That's the main question of an ongoing survey being conducted by the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan, or APAS. APAS President Ian Boxall encourages producers to share what matters to them to get the conversation going.
You know, I think with maybe some of the crop insurance numbers that came out last week, that might be a concern for producers in the upcoming election is, you know, what's the future look like for crop insurance and some of those programs. You know, I think drought preparedness is something maybe that the province should be looking at. I think that could be an election issue. Is there ways that we could drought-proof certain areas of the province? Is there some things that could be done for, you know, maybe there needs to be some more time and effort spent on you know, water infrastructure in certain parts of the province. So I think there's lots of things that producers will put in the survey, and we're just looking forward to seeing what those are, and we'll put those into a document and have conversations with elected officials that when the time comes.
He outlines his top priorities once the next Saskatchewan election is called.
So I think it depends what you look at. I think provincially, I think, you know, longevity crop insurance, what does that look like? What do our programs look like for the future? I think there's some work the province could do, like I said, on drought preparedness, on whether that be for irrigation or, you know, water for livestock infrastructure, whatever that looks like. It also could be piggybacked up with some drainage, right? Like, I think those two things could go hand in hand. That could be some benefit to producers. I think that's something the province could be looking at. And I think there's always a little bit of a discussion that comes around social license, around, you know, that we are able to continue to farm in the way that is best for the land and production and the environment and all of that. And there's been lots of grumblings, and we've seen it in other countries, and that might be more of a federal issue, but are we going to be able to continue to farm the way that we have farmed in the past, right?
And Boxall encourages producers to take part in their survey.
Well, I think log in, fill out the survey so we know what we need to be working on and what we need to be lobbying the government for as we go into an election this year in Saskatchewan. And there's no deadline as of yet, but just, you know, watch the website and get logged on and fill it out, because we want to hear from people and want to make sure that we are doing what producers need done in this province. And, you know, we talk to our reps and we talk to people across the province all the time, but hearing directly from them, you know, like, this is an issue is great information.
That's APAS President Ian Boxall. The Seeding Success, Assess, Act, and Achieve Farm Business Practices Assessment Workshop is coming up this Friday from 8:30 until 4:30. That's being held in Saskatoon. And the Back to Business webinar session for producer panel will be held tomorrow from 12 until 1:30. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock, time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, an 80% chance of flurries, 3 to 6 centimeters possible, winds east-northeast at 10 to 20, and a high of minus 11 degrees. For tonight, a 70% chance of snow showers, 1 to 2 centimeters, then becoming cloudy, winds north-northwest at 15 to 25, a low of minus 19. For tomorrow, a mix of sun and cloud, winds north-northeast at 10 to 20, a high of minus 10, an overnight low of minus 23. For Friday, mainly sunny, winds south-southwest at 15 to 25, a high of minus 8. For Saturday, partly to mainly sunny, a high of minus 2. And for Sunday, sunny, a high of plus 3. In the Paw, Brandon and Shoal Lake Russell, it's minus 12 degrees. Swan River, minus 15. Dauphin, minus 16. Roblin, minus 14. Regina, Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, all reporting in at minus 13. Saskatoon, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 16. Indian Head, minus 14. The Yorkton-Melville region has light snow, an east-northeast wind at 17 kilometers an hour. 83% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 14 degrees, with the wind chill it feels more like minus 22 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.